Welcome to Cannabis Connection World Podcast, where cannabis connectors meet and discuss the gospel truth of cannabis, the plant connecting the planet.
Welcome to episode 10 of Cannabis Connection World. On this episode, in cannabis class, we will learn more about the different species of the cannabis plant, and we will get a better understanding of the difference between THC and CBD, and how these two components determine whether the plant is classified as industrial hemp or marijuana. Then you will hear the first half of my interview with an amazing woman that I like to call the godmother of CBD, Ms. Shira Adler. She is author of the fascinating book called The ABCs of CBD. I use it as my personal guide for CBD understanding. And in the Cannabis Chronicles, you will hear from a familiar voice tell her personal story of how cannabis saved her life. So sit back and relax as I serve you this cannabis content rolled up perfectly for your consumption.
Cannabis class.
Okay, let's start with what the actual definition of cannabis is. According to Oxford Dictionary, it is a tall plant with a stiff upright stem, divided serrated leaves, and large hairs. There are three different species, Cannabis sativa, Cannabis indica, and Cannabis ruderalis. When you combine the two most popular of these species, the indica and the sativa, you get a new breed called hybrid. Here's how terms have shifted since their earliest botanical definitions. Today, sativa refers to tall, narrow leaf varieties of cannabis thought to induce energizing effects. Indica has come to describe stout, broadleaf plants thought to deliver sedating effects. What we call hemp refers to the industrial, non-intoxicating varieties harvested primarily for fiber, seeds, and CBD. Cannabis plants can be male, female, or both, hermaphrodite. But what you might get from the neighborhood weed man are the flowers of a female plant. Female plants produce the large, resin-secreting flowers that are trimmed down to round or pointed buds, while males produce smaller pollen sacs near the base of the leaves. The male plants pollinate the female plants to initiate seed production. But the potent flowers we consume come from the seedless female plants, called sensimilia, which grow large cannabinoid-rich buds without the seed. The rare hermaphroditic plants contain both female and male sex organs that allow the plant to pollinate itself during flowering. This self-pollination is typically deemed a nuisance among growers, as it spoils the seedless sensimilia plants and passes on hermaphroditic genes. We've talked about cannabinoids before on this show. We know the cannabis plant consists of hundreds of cannabinoids, which are the chemical compounds that create a unique harmony of effects, which is primarily led by cannabinoids and terpenes. Cannabinoids like THC and CBD, the two most common, and are the main drivers of cannabis therapeutic and recreational effects. So THC, which is technically called tetrahydrocannabinol, makes us feel hungry and high and relieves symptoms like pain and nausea. CBD, technically known as cannabidiol, is a non-intoxicating compound known to alleviate anxiety, pain, inflammation, and many other medical ailments. All right, so let me try to explain what terpenes are. Okay, if you've ever used aromatherapy to relax or invigorate your mind and body, you understand the basics of terpenes. Terpenes are aromatic compounds commonly produced by plants and fruit. They can be found in lavender flowers, oranges, hops, pepper, and of course cannabis. Secreted by the same glands that ooze THC and CBD, terpenes are what make cannabis smell like berries, citrus, pine, etc. Like essential oils vaporized in a diffuser, cannabis terpenes can make us feel stimulated or sedated, depending on which ones are produced. Pinene, for example, is an alerting terpene, while linalool has relaxing properties. There are many types of terpenes in cannabis, and it's worth familiarizing yourself with at least the most common. Now, when it comes to self-medicating using cannabis, instead of choosing a strain based on its indica, sativa, or hybrid classification, consider basing your selection on these three points instead. THC dominant strains are primarily chosen by consumers seeking a potent, euphoric experience. These strains are also selected by patients treating pain, depression, anxiety, insomnia, and more. If you tend to feel anxious with THC-dominant strains or dislike other effects associated with THC, try a strain with higher levels of CBD. CBD-dominant strains contain only small amounts of THC and are widely used by those highly sensitive to THC or patients needing clear-headed symptom relief. Balanced THC and CBD strains contain balanced levels of THC, offering mild euphoria alongside symptom relief. These tend to be a good choice for novice consumers seeking an introduction to cannabis signature high. The more I learn about cannabis and use it medicinally myself, the more I understand how important it is to know what THC and CBD levels are in the products I am using. THC helps me manage pain from my fibroids and my menstrual cramping every month, and helps me to deal with bouts of depression. CBD helps me to conquer anxiety on a daily basis. Technology is just beginning to allow us to separate and isolate these cannabinoids, giving us the ability to research their true medicinal properties. As I learn on this journey, I will take you with me to cannabis school. It is important that we search for the facts together so that we can spread the truth to the masses. As I always say, facts will put an end to this 81-year prohibition of cannabis. Okay, that's enough for this week's cannabis class. Next episode, we will learn more about hemp and CBD and more about the medicinal benefits of using it for treating various diseases. Up next, I have part one of my amazing conversation with a cannabis-centered health and wellness guru, Shira Adler, who authored a book called The ABCs of CBD. This book teaches you about the history of hemp and the tools that will help you to manage pain and a better understanding of the science and the law regarding hemp. It is a great read. Let's start this interview with Shira Adler.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's really an honor. Your podcast is so enlightening, and you are such a bright light in this movement. So it's really an honor to spend some time talking. So just a little bit about my background. It's actually really unusual because I come from not the medical background, even though I talk a lot about certain medical aspects of CBD in my book, which is called The ABCs of CBD, The Essential Guide for Parents and Regular Folks Too. My background is clergy, and my background is more metaphysically focused and spiritual in nature. And truthfully, I came to all of this because I'm a parent, because I saw a problem in the world, a problem with my former congregants, a problem with the people that I work with in my private practice as a certified past life regressionist, and I wanted to know what else is out there in the world that I can learn about, try, experience, and share.
Awesome. We're so glad that you are sharing with all of us. Can you explain a little bit about the difference between hemp and cannabis?
The funny thing about the difference between hemp and cannabis is that it's actually bigger than people think, because we hear so much in the news about marijuana, about medical marijuana, about cannabis, and everyone thinks that it's all one big pot. And in a way it is, at least as far as I'm concerned, for the civil justice reasons. But hemp and cannabis, you can think of them in simple terms as cousin plants. They're really the same species, but they're two different forms of the plant species in terms of whether they're male or female plants, whether they're allowed to grow to bud or not. In fact, hemp and cannabis farms can't be anywhere near each other, because if those hemp seeds go flying around in the wind, they can sterilize an entire cannabis field.
Huh, interesting. Okay. And so they're the same, but they're not.
Right. They're the same species. They're not the same plant. The points of what they're used for can be really different. Hemp can be used for fiber and for seeds, for nutritional reasons, for we think about adding some hemp seeds into your smoothie in the morning, or some of the clothing and some of the fiber that were used in ropes and our early textiles in this country. Hemp has been around and used in more forms for longer than what we know of cannabis being used as medicine, even though it's been also used as medicine since the beginning of time. And those are really important distinctions between what the plant can be used for And part of the reason hemp shouldn't even be under, or CBD from hemp should not be under the same regulations as CBD that comes from cannabis plants. Although personally, I don't think any CBD should be regulated. I think we need to, we can get into all the politics of that, but
okay.
Different
yeah.
uses, different plans. And honestly, for the layperson, you only need to remember one difference. The CBD, regardless of where you're getting it, is non-psychoactive. It's an antipsychotic. It doesn't get you high.
Right. And so I want to talk more about THC and CBD in a minute. But tell us more about what are the different strains of the cannabis plant, and then we can get into THC and CBD.
Well, there are lots of different strains. I wrote about a bunch of them in the book. And just to be clear, the book covers more than just CBD, because
right.
I do want people to understand how this entire industry, in this moment that's become a movement, we really want to get into, well, why is there so much buzz about being buzzed? That was actually
mm-hmm.
funny, and I didn't do it on purpose. But I'm like, I like that. I got to use that again.
Yeah, use that.
So, you know, what is the deal with this? Why do we need to know, and why are we so concerned about thinking about strains and plants? And I'm really out here to share as much information as possible on any different level. But there are some fundamental levels that I think if you are a canna curious person or parent, it's your responsibility to know more than what other people are willing to tell you. And by other people, I mean the government, because they're way off base on this, but even other companies who sort of put a lot of stuff on their label, like CBD. Well, that's great, but where is it grown? What plants is it derived from? You know, is it medical cannabis or is it straight industrial hemp? You know, what qualifies for industrial hemp versus a cannabis strain?
Mm.
There's a lot to know. And then once you figure out, well, this is what I'm putting in my body and this is a non-psychoactive ingredient and it's going to help me on some level, excellent. But then, are you sure it has organic practices?
Mm-hmm.
How about solvent residues? What about pesticide mm-hmm. levels? What about toxins?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of stuff going on in this industry. But that doesn't mean that everything that's coming out of the industry is equally clean and trustworthy and appropriate for you or your child. Maybe you need full medical cannabis. Maybe you start with a CBD from hemp product. You know, that's where I'm coming from. I want people to know.
Okay. Well, so right. So the difference between, the main difference between THC and CBD, is the psychoactive effect. We've talked about this in my previous episodes. And so, as the one of many one of hundreds of cannabinoids that are in the cannabis plant, and THC being more prominent in the cannabis version of the plant, and CBD being more prominent in the industrial hemp version of the plant. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, exactly. And there's a little bit, we can go into a little more of a difference. So in industrial hemp, in the cannabinoid structures, like all of them, the whole group of the cannabinoids, CBD, cannabidiol being the strongest one or the most important one in terms of the efficacy, what it does and how to use it and why it helps the body, primarily, regardless of where you get it, it's anti-inflammatory. It's one of the biggest benefits, because everything that goes wrong or creates a state of dis-ease or disease in your body is really an inflammatory response to some stimulus. So regardless of where you're getting it, CBD is the stuff that's going to primarily be the main big, I call them Oompa Loompas in my book when I'm talking about
mm-hmm.
cannabinoids. It's like the senior contractor. That's the one you want. In industrial hemp, by law, you have to have less than 0.3% THC. There is a little THC in there, but it's not enough to register in the brain or the body chemistry or any of that. It's not enough to create any, there's no psychoactive effect. CBD in both plants is, again, it's mostly anti-inflammatory. It does a whole lot of great healing. The reason people think CBD is completely THC-free is because they're used to thinking, well, it can't get you high. And that's true anyway, because the strains, the way even in cannabis strains are developed, you now have the ability to cultivate plants to have higher or lower amounts of certain cannabinoids. And so we call it hippie's disappointment. That's what hemp is, because from the 70s, it was nicknamed, because the THC is so low, it couldn't get you high. Mm. But in strains today for rec and for medical use on the cannabis side, you're talking about something completely different. There, the strains are developed for the reverse. And some of them are being artificially developed to have really, really high and more addictive qualities to the THC. That's for certain rec use and certain companies that are, again, pumping up the stuff and artificially messing with the plants. I'm not cool with that. You want to get high, get high, but keep it clean and natural.
Right, not synthetics. Exactly.
Nope,
I'm with that as well. Because I'm definitely not with making the drug industry more rich by purchasing fake marijuana. If I'm going to use cannabis, I'm going to use the real thing, not the synthetic thing.
Right. I call that in the book Swede. Fake weed is Swede.
Swede. I love it.
Yeah, S-W-E-D. Yeah.
I love it. That synthetic weed, right. All right,
right.
So give us a brief timeline, because you talk about it extensively in your book, but if you could give us a brief overview of how hemp has been used in human history over the last 2,000 years.
Oh, my goodness. You know, one of the really interesting things is that people really don't know what we don't know, right? And we certainly don't know what our teachers and our textbooks never take a minute to tell us, which is kind of disconcerting. When you look into this, really, the whole history, you're like, what? This stuff has been used forever. Our original forefathers, founders of this country, were basically bud tenders, if you really want to get specific. They were all hemp farmers. They were all tokers. They promoted George Washington and Jefferson that everybody should have hemp farms and everybody should grow hemp. And here are some of the reasons why. I mean, it's just so ironic. The government and our administration today has such an opposite perspective about what the forefathers thought about this beloved plant, the cannabis species called hemp. So back in, for example, 1797, right? Like the USA's oldest commissioned naval vessel, which was called the USS Constitution. It was called, nicknamed in movies and things, Old Ironside. Somebody might remember from that. That's nicknamed that by George Washington. You know that it had more than 22,000 tons of hemp fiber in order to man the 44-gun battleship Behemoth. I mean, that's a lot of good use of good crop. Think of how many farmers were employed in having to grow all of that. Mm. So the whole Revolutionary War era farmer thing, those were all cannabis sativa fields that were growing that crop. The British Crown was so interested in it. I mean, it really goes back to the very beginning of our country. But for
beyond
reason,
that,
beyond that, you know, you can go way, way, way back to 8,000 BCE when they have hemp cord and pottery that they found. That's, you know, we're talking over 10,000 years ago that in Taiwan they had that, I think, the first use. And then we go all the way up, you know, when Kentuckians started growing hemp. That was back in 1776. And then, you know, even in 1850, cannabis was added to the U.S. pharmacopoeia. You know, think about the Encyclopedia of All Good Things, right?
Right.
Which is, again, ironic considering what happened after 1910. We had the Mexican Revolution, which we had a lot of Mexican immigrants coming in. And they introduced that beautiful marijuana was part of their treatment, their medicine, their shamanic history, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. But that actually is when things started to turn a little bit. Mm-hmm. After 1916, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the chief scientist back then, created paper from hemp, right? Mm-hmm. Now, that's when somebody got jealous. And who got jealous of that? When people started using hemp for paper in the 1930s, we saw
Hearst.
A man, yes,
mm-hmm.
William Randolph Hearst.
Yes,
who was,
we talk about him in one of our first episodes, because I talk about the history of cannabis in this country. And so, yeah, we talk about what his contribution to Harry Anslinger and the DuPont family and stopping the cultivation of cannabis in this country.
And not just stopping the cultivation, but using his magazines. Remember, he was the first media mogul, kind of like what, I mean, no offense, but Trump is now.
Right.
Going from TV into the populace of American culture.
Or Oliver Stone. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically saying, you know, that drug is associated with those people. And those mm-hmm. people were the Mexican immigrants. And there you go. Now we've got institutional racism. Mm-hmm. We have media using its voice inappropriately to put down and to slander a type of group of person.
And yeah, Reefer Madness. Yeah, Reefer Madness.
Right, we got Reefer Madness in 1936. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. that was, you know, so funny. Except that it's not so funny. Because
it's not.
It's stuck.
It's lies and propaganda that actually worked.
And when they passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 37, mm-hmm. you know, and they basically, someone testified that the American Medical Association knows of no evidence that marijuana is a dangerous drug. And then
it's funny that you say somebody testified.
Yeah. I mean, there was an actual real response when Congress passed that Marijuana Tax Act to criminalize the drug. And it was actually Dr. William Woodward who testified on behalf of the NA. He said, are you serious? Like, don't do this. This is a huge mistake. But we never recovered from that. And somehow here we are, and it took all the way to 2017. Literally, this book came out in January, and I pulled it back from the printers as late as right after Governor Cuomo signed in that PTSD is a qualifying medical condition here in New York for our medical cannabis program. But that's what is so amazing about this. We've been struggling under this prohibition, this institutional racism, for 80 years. But things are shifting and changing, and the second it does, it is the job of powerful women like you, like myself, to get out there, to tell people, to talk about it, to show what using this medicine, and it is plant medicine, what it can do for you and for your family. And we owe it to ourselves to speak the truth and share the truth.
Absolutely. And thank you for doing that. So the last few episodes, I spoke with doctors that have been researching the endocannabinoid system for years. And they gave us a great explanation of how the system works within our body. Can you explain a little bit more about how CBD and THC play an important role in the functioning of that system?
Yes, so the CBD, the way this works, I actually like to explain it since your listeners already know a little bit about the endocannabinoid system.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on the difference between the endocannabinoid system and, let's say, the opioid system. Because a big reason we love CBD and why we're trying to fight this war on drugs, we all know that that whole myth of cannabis is a gateway drug has been debunked. Not only is it not a gateway drug, it's an exit strategy for addiction. So to understand why that's so important is just look in the news. Look how many people's lives, how the fabric of the American family has been ripped apart because of the epidemic that is man-made, that was greed-made by opioid companies. And now we have a huge problem. We're trying to fix it. Cannabis can help to fix it, in my humble opinion, because it's what our bodies do. So what do I mean by that? We have opioid receptors in the brain, which we all know that's what the opioids attach to, but we have endocannabinoid receptors throughout our body. The strongest places are in the mouth and the butt. My company, Shira Synergy, we don't make suppositories. I'll leave that for somebody else. But we do everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the way those CBD and all the cannabinoids, they attach as agonists to those receptor sites. But those receptors are in every organ in our body. So what we're really doing is kind of an opposite effect of what the opioid receptors do. Because the opioid receptors can shut down and control and you stop breathing. You can literally just die.
Shut down your cardiovascular system. Right. Yeah.
Yep. And the CBD, the cannabinoid receptors, do not do that.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they actually do something even more magical. The endocannabinoid system regulates and sort of oversees all the other systems in a gentle way by creating homeostasis in the body. So people, whether you got any sort of disease, any sort of challenge, mental health issue, physical, emotional, spiritual, I don't even care, your system needs to feel balanced. It needs that homeostasis. It affects sleep and appetite and regulatory systems and everything. So the more you take CBD, even just as a basic dietary supplement, never mind all the beautiful things medical cannabis can full on do.
Mm-hmm.
The more you support your body in the most fundamental, beautiful ways possible.
Wow. And you know, I never realized that there were opioid receptors in our bodies as well. And but thank you for explaining that. It's funny because I was just about to say you dedicate an entire chapter to opioid addiction, the opioid crisis in your book. And I wanted to you to explain how cannabis helped to get us off of opioids safely, but still helps to manage the pain. And you did that beautifully. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
You also mentioned in your book that when you noticed in an airport that Time Magazine and Rolling Stone covers highlighting the cannabis industry last year, you knew that there was a significant change in the culture. What did you mean by that?
Oh, yes. I remember that day so vividly. And in fact, on my way back from a conference I just did in Oklahoma City as part of this new movement called CEASE, Cannabis Education Advocacy Symposium at the Expo, run by a beautiful goddess you got to meet if you don't know, Dashita Dawson. It's just powerhouse. So I'm walking through the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'll introduce you. She's amazing. She's someone I know, Susan McGraw.
She's mm-hmm. part of Minorities for Medical Marijuana. I'm the Georgia chapter president. So
yes, Ron's there, right? So,
yes. So I'm very familiar.
They were
with that
there season. With me, Leo Bridgewater and Ralph McCarthy, and I were in Oklahoma. So I walked out of that airport and I walked right into one. I did a stop in Chicago and I walked into the bookstore because it just still blows me away that you can now find certain magazines and marijuana business ventures and High Times. And I'm very honored that both Dope and High Times are reviewing my book, which is
awesome.
A beautiful thing. Yes.
Congratulations.
It's coming out. I'm the 420 edition, baby.
That's awesome.
From High Times.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what that means is, do you remember a couple of years ago when those really, really badly written books, 50 Shades of Grey, first came out, right?
Yes.
And why am I bringing that up on a podcast about cannabis? Because it reflects on where our society is. Now, I'm a shopper mom. I represent the demographic of the type of person who's going to read my book, who's going to buy something to help her aging parent or her struggling teen, right?
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
I'm that same person that would read until I couldn't stand it because it was so badly written. I'm sorry, but I'm a snob on that. 50 Shades of Grey, when it came out, were read mostly on Kindle, mostly away from the prying or judgmental eyes of any neighbor. And yet, every suburban mom I knew read that book. We just didn't tell anybody out loud that we were reading it.
Right.
It was like, oh no, my family can't know I'm reading this. This is not okay. And we judged ourselves and we covered the book cover and we hid it on Kindle so nobody could see what we were doing. That's
mm-hmm.
what I was thinking of. Now we fast forward. And you can walk in a mainstream airport and find magazines on cannabis. And here we still have Jeff Sessions saying only bad people smoke marijuana, right? And then he was slapped with the federal cannabis lawsuit, which I was honored to support. And we're still doing that fight because it was just dismissed. The motion to dismiss was granted. So we're a little bummed. It's a sidestep, but it does not hold us down. Let's say that.
Right.
But here we are trying to bring out information and be in the public and be in the world and say, I'm the face of cannabis. I'm a regular mom. Doesn't matter the color of my skin. Doesn't matter where I live. I'm everywhere and I'm everyone. And so, yeah, I'm going to pick up a pot magazine in an airport.
And I'm going to let everybody know that I'm reading about cannabis.
That's right. And then I have the most amazing conversations everywhere I go. When people see me, I always have a copy of my book in my bag. And every single time that I hold this book or someone catches the cover, they're like, oh, what is that? Oh, I heard about that. Oh, tell me more.
Tell me more.
Yeah, tell me more. I'm like, how much time do you have, baby? Because
right.
I can tell you a lot.
Talk all day about this. And that's why I probably wear my pin everywhere I go. It's funny because at first, when I first bought it, it's like, okay, I can wear it here, but I might not want to wear it here. And now I'm realizing because I've dedicated my life to this at this point, I'm understanding the benefits and the pros and cons that come with the cannabis plant and the industry itself, but I realized that if I'm going to be an advocate, I need to be proud of the voice that I have in this space. And I can't be debating with myself on where and when I'm going to wear my pin that proudly, obviously says I am a cannabis supporter. So I appreciate you for being so bold and so brave to go anywhere in front of anybody and talk about this plant. How much you love it.
Thanks again, Shira, for joining us on this episode of Cannabis Connection World. Catch the second half of my interview with Shira on the next episode. We discuss even further her personal journey to becoming the CBD mama. On this episode of the Cannabis Chronicles, that familiar voice I talked about hearing is mine. This is Nicole Bufong's Cannabis Chronicle story. I have smoked cannabis since I was 15 years old, using it to self-medicate. Anxiety and my attention deficit disorder were two of the diseases that it helped me with. I was never diagnosed, but now as an adult and with a better understanding of what the plant does, I look back at my adolescence and realize that this is what I did for over 20 years. Then in March of 2017, I went to Grady ER because the swelling in my legs would not go down. After the tests, the swelling in my legs was determined to be a cause of chronic kidney disease. Come to find out, my kidneys were being weakened by HIV. I stayed in the hospital for a week to monitor my weak kidneys, do a kidney biopsy, and get me on the right regimen of antiretrovirals to help my body fight the virus. My entire world was turned upside down. But thank God for the support of my mother, my rock, and all the people at Grady's Infectious Disease Program that helped me to transition into my new reality of being HIV positive. And so my journey begins to find a path to healing. My research leads me to find that a plant-based diet is the first step I need to help my body fight the virus and to strengthen my kidneys. Nutrition was my first line of defense. Because my kidneys were weakened by the virus, going untreated for a period of time, I had to be careful what pharmaceuticals I used, many of them having damaging side effects. I also suffer from fibroids, and every month during my menstrual period, I would suffer from severe pain and heavy bleeding. My holistic healing research also led me to using cannabis to manage my pain. Instead of taking 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol every 6 hours, the first 48 hours of my period, I began using cannabis topicals, tincture, and flower to manage the crippling pain. I'm glad to report that I've successfully been using only cannabis to manage my pain for the last 3 months. I also use cannabis to manage my severe anxiety and bouts of depression over the last year. Since I've started a plant-based diet, I'm not taking pharmaceuticals to manage my cholesterol or my kidney function, but I am still taking the ARV, antiretrovirals, that was prescribed to fight the virus. I've not found an all-natural equivalent to what this pill does to fight the virus in my body. But my research and my new network of doctors and scientists say I should treat myself with cannabis in every way that I can. So I use full-spectrum oil, sublingually. I use topicals on my abdomen during my period, I vape cannabis oil, I take suppositories, and I smoke cannabis flowers. The only thing I cannot do is juice the plant because I put at risk my mother and my freedom, me and my mother's freedom, by growing plants in our home. This is the civil rights violation that me and so many others in this country face. I should not have to risk my freedom to grow a plant in my home that I want to use as medicine. The real criminals are the government officials who refuse to take cannabis out of a Schedule 1 classification. The reason I fight so hard for this plant is because I know what it has done for me, and I see every day what it does for others. I do this podcast to educate the ones that are not like me, people out there that still think smoking weed makes you a bad person. How can you tell a person with stage 4 colon cancer that smoking a joint makes them a bad person when all it does is make their pain go away? Or a 12-year-old girl that wants to drive one day, but cannot because she cannot find medicine that stops her seizures, except cannabis. Or what about the veterans suffering from PTSD that use cannabis to help stop the nightmares and get some good sleep? I am on a mission to educate as many people as I can on the truth about cannabis, giving the citizens of the world this life-saving plant back to them. That's it. That's my story. Thanks for joining me on this episode of Cannabis Connection World. I hope by sharing my own personal story that it gives you the strength to tell your own journey. please reach out to me if you would like to come on the show to tell your cannabis story. If you have any questions about the show today, please email me at info@cannabisconnectionworld.com. Looking forward to connecting with you. Hey, and don't forget, Cannabis Connectors, you can follow all the adventures of the podcast on Instagram at Cannabis Connection Podcast, or on Facebook at Mary Jane Connectors, or on Twitter at CannaConWorld. That's spelled CannaConN World. Thanks again for joining me for another episode of Cannabis Connection World. In the next episode, we will dig deeper into what industrial hemp is and how CBD plays a part in the medicinal use of the plant. You will hear the second half of my interview with Shira Adler, the author of The ABCs of CBD, now available on Amazon.com. And in the Cannabis Chronicles, you will hear from patients using cannabis to treat their diseases. New episode every Sunday on Podomatic and Stitcher Podcast. You don't want to miss it.